Today's theme for our live lesson takes place on another mountain. Jesus is with his disciples, and he said, "So let's go for a walk on that mountain. I'm going to take you and you and you." And so they took off, three of the guys, three of the four. And the others are not mentioned at all, so I'm assuming they're going to the town for Easter. So, in order to hear Jesus, we're going to look at Matthew's version of his adventure. And Mark and Luke have a few things I want to pull in. And so, if you have any Bibles, you want to follow along in the text, it's Matthew chapter 17. I'm going to begin at verse 1, so we'll take a while to read through the 13 verses, because I'm going to keep saying stuff in there to help you grasp what is actually going on. So, Matthew 17, I'm going to begin. After 6 days, so before we get very far into the text, I'm going to give you a little bit of information here. This passage is often linked back to Matthew 16:28, where the text tells us, "Truly I tell you," these are Jesus' words, "some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." This is mostly ahead of scholars and other people. It's mostly ahead because we're trying to figure out when did that happen. And there are some people who say that this scene that we're looking at today is that first, the transfiguration with Jesus in him, when he said, "You will see the coming of the kingdom." And if that's the case, then these three guys had a glimpse of the wonders of the kingdom that you and I have served. So, after 6 days, Luke, if you're reading Luke, Luke said 8 days. And I keep mentioning that commentators are saying, they say something about every verse and every page. So, when they get here and they get the 8 verses to 6, what they do is say, well, it's one of those old things where when you're counting days, they counted the parts of the day, each Saturday, so he came up with 8. I'm just thinking Luke is doing research and got that information. But anyway, just so if you're looking at the two texts side by side, they're not real, they're just different. Peter seems to allude to this thing in 2 Peter chapter 1, where he wrote, "So we did not follow cleverly devised stories." There was some undercurrents that they made some of this stuff up. "These are not cleverly devised stories when we told you that the coming of the Lord Christ is coming, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty." So keep that phrase in mind, eyewitnesses of his majesty, as we go through this passage. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and maybe if you think about how he depicted them, they were in this inner circle, and they perhaps more than the others were ready for what they were about to experience. They lived them up on high mountain by themselves, and Luke adds to pray. And by one commentator at this point, I'm going to read what he wrote because this is so important. This is so important for us, for those of us who run non-stop. This is what comes here. This was Jesus' retreat. And you might be careful with chapter 4, the deep blue shapes of glory. They returned to ministry. He took the time for it, that is, for the blood. And think of you, getting anything signed from office, from taxes, from highways, from advertising. First, distract that. Need something first. Need something different. Clearly, longer than usual. Retreat provides a different pace, a change of scenery, adventure, yes, and a chance to meet with them. Take time for it. And I thought that was just so cool. And they had all these people yelling at me, take time off. And here was incredible. So, I'm telling you, pay attention to this. If you're one of those ones who just wanted to be called out, take a break. The mountain, we're not sure, but you think it's either Mount Hermon or Mount Hayward. And I'm kind of thinking that God likes mountains. And he's met with Moses in Exodus chapter 24. He's met with Elijah in 1 Kings 19 by mountains. He's here on another mountain. And I don't know whether it's because it's closer to heaven or it's further away from the distractions of the place where they actually normally live. But there on the mountain, he was transfigured. That's what we're talking about today. He was transfigured. And that word transfigured is a Greek word that talks about an outer change based on something that's inside. And when we think about that, the thing that comes to mind first are caterpillars. You see caterpillars, racing in a kind of ugly, tiny little thing. And inside them is a butterfly. Usually beautiful. And the
Jesus was doing here as he was transfigured. He was revealing what was inside of him. There's an aside here, it's a natural aside, which I'm going to push us a little bit, but if we cut way open, spiritually, if it would come out, we would look like Jesus, or someone else. But Jesus is transfigured. He was changed. He was transfigured before them. His son is praying like his son. His clothes before his wife is light. And with them, a sword before them, Moses and Elijah. In fact, they also were in this glorious splendor. And they were talking to Jesus. Isn't that cool? Jesus radiates what's inside him. He's on this mountain, which is cool in itself. But Moses and Elijah are there, and they also are radiating glory, transfigured, allowing us to catch a glimpse of his glory, a living visual of what Moses experienced in that tent, where he had to wear the veil because he glowed, because he hung around with God. This is kind of wondering why we don't glow. Are we doing it well? Are we not connected in a way that we don't grow? And this commentary says that this is a foretaste of the images that are described in the book of Revelation, a taste of proving of service, of the radiance, of human remnants of God's glory, because they were capable of grasping or even destroying it. Kind of like that some of you are way too young to know this, but back in the day when we were going to have a solar eclipse, we made pinball cameras. How many people remember that? Pinball cameras. Did you read that down, Jeffrey? Okay. We put a real camera in it because, you know, they told us if you missed the sun, you'd get the light. And we love to bring more little kids, but we do that and we go inside and they set up these lights and lights. And we stand in a back to the sun that is slowly being eclipsed, and you would put these circles so that that thing lined up, and you could watch the eclipse in the background. That's kind of what I feel this is like. They saw some of his glory, and none, but they remembered it greatly. It was a first glimpse of all that Jesus was. Probably what he was like before the incarnation, before he wrapped flesh around himself. Probably what he's going to look like when he's here in the world. John wrote in the book of Revelation, this is just a little snippet. He saw something while he was on the mountain. That's what he was here. The man of the head was made of glory, made of glory, his eyes were as blurred as fire, and his feet were like dragons glowing in the furnace, and his voice was like the sound of whistling water. In his right hand, he had seven stars, and coming out of his mouth was a double-edged sword, and his face was like the sun shining in all its glory. What was and remained within Jesus of his deity as he wrapped himself in human flesh, and began to swell out of his mouth. It wasn't created for that moment, it was revealed in that moment. It had been close. Moses and Elijah, his voice. There is some discussion of why Moses and Elijah, that's Pastor George. As we teach through the storyline of the Old Testament, Moses is the predictor of Jesus, and Elijah is his precursor, the words that are often told in that direction. Moses represented the word, Elijah the prophet, and then affirmed or confirmed the messianic mission. And his visitation, it further removed the idea that Jesus might have been Moses reincarnated or Elijah come back. Because then they were afraid of him by themselves. He wasn't dead. And he, verse 4, how many people left here away from him? Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it was good hard for us to be here. Though they weren't actually invited, they never come around here to say, if you wish, I will set up three chapters of booths, one for you, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah. The question is, in fact, the offer is to set up first. Remember, let's not forget this moment for that he even interrupted the conversation with three or five of us. So after this, and I love Mark about this, and he says, he didn't know what to say, but he said something anyway. So, there is an Old Testament practice that are setting up memorials at the major of the world. The remembrance of their rescue and escape from Egypt, where they lived in the wilderness and probably covered themselves with whatever they could find in one day's weapons. It was actually sweating. And as they celebrated the exodus through the tabernacle, so the Feast of Booths, those people will move into booths in the side of their backyard and not live in their homes as they remember. These three men, they knew God. They knew God what Jesus was in God. But they had had experiences, and they knew stuff deeper than you're going to get when you're reading the Bible. They just knew stuff. And so, this is a special moment. These guys were there for Jesus, with Jesus. And in spite of what Peter had already learned, and what he was observing on the mountain, it is interesting that Peter missed it when he talked about setting up the booth. He just said, "Where could we take you?" He missed that Jesus wasn't like Elijah or Moses. He missed that Jesus was God. He was the spokesperson for him. And maybe, so that it may be far more Peter's flight, here's verse 5. While he was still speaking, a great cloud covered him, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I love, with whom I am well pleased. Listen." That word "listen," it's a Greek word, means to hear, to obey. Not just hear his words, but to hear, to obey. God the Father stepped into that scene. There's no mention of Peter's idea. There's a redirect. Listen to my son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen and obey. But I can show this way that God remembers stories of Moses, the father of the Lord of God. Not just Pharaoh's voice, but the thundering voice of God, and the voice was such that he obeyed. He did what was suggested or after the commandment. Or we think of the pillar, the fire and smoke that led them. God's presence always keeps running. And it's this. Here on this mountain, these three guys were in God, verse 6. When the disciples came to him, God came down to the ground. The idea of God saying that near had become a reality. They were overwhelmed and they dropped. But this is the beautiful thing about Jesus this evening. Verse 7, but Jesus, he came and touched him. Now, what we have here is the power and healing of an intimate touch. These guys had been undone by what they had been allowed to see. And they were perhaps But Jesus came over and touched them, and he said, "Do not be afraid." Yeah. And when they looked, it was just Jesus. So, we kind of try to put this in modern day, where Jesus is kind of putting these guys together. He says, "Well, guys, it's just my fight. This fight is worse than a fight. Or the fight is worse than a fight." Yeah, he's kind of calming these guys down because they've been allowed to see something that was so traumatic, but so profound. They needed to see it. But they weren't able to. But it didn't appear that they were looking for it. He's not a clown. Jesus tells us that he's not a clown. He found it. But he's not. He's going to hold us together. And this whole thing, the setting up of the booth, it messes with us because we're like, what were they thinking? And I'm thinking, not that complicated. I'm thinking, Peter, maybe more than the others, he just wanted this to continue. Haven't you had a moment where you didn't want it to stop? Maybe you should get out of grace about that. I've had lots of those moments. I mean, sometimes it's a miracle. I don't want this one to stop. And sometimes it's hanging out with people. I don't want this to stop. But here was this moment where God was close. And they saw things. And they didn't understand them, but they knew this was profound. And they didn't want to stop it. I think the book could go, this is that simple. I don't want this to end. And I think we need to be careful with that. Because he was going to set up the place. Isn't that what we've done? We're the church. We've been energized by God. Jesus' Spirit lives within us. And he calls us church. It's church like that. It's sort of over here. I think it's pastor said, "You don't want to church over there, but only the way you live in it. You are. We are the church." But we do, if we're not careful, what Peter did. We set up a booth, and we call it church. We just want to hang out here where it's really cold, where it's safe, where it's warm. It's Jesus. That's not what he's about. He's trying to help them see, to understand. And the disciples, they're here, and they look up at Jesus. They realize the scene was gone. Now it's just the four of them, and the echo of God's voice. Hear and obey. Can I have a little bit of freedom here? I think those same words are for you and me. We are to listen to Jesus with the intent of obeying. Not listening because it's the right thing to do at Sunday morning, or at 6 in the morning, or 5 in the morning, or whatever you're listening to Scripture. And I know you're listening to me a lot, but don't listen to me, listen for him in those moments. Because that's what I'm trying to bring here. But let's not get caught up in this Peter thing, where our group, is where it's at. Because this isn't where it's at. This is where we're at right now. But this isn't what we're supposed to be about. We'll talk about that a little bit. Okay. Now, if you're thinking about Jesus instructed him, listen to these instructions. Don't tell anyone what Jesus. Has anybody ever told you, don't tell anybody about this that they showed you this amazing thing you want to tell 5,000 people? It happens to me all the time. And maybe it's because I'm a pastor and people trust me. That's scary. To be tested at that level, to be told you can't tell anybody about something. Don't tell anyone that you're seeing until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. Okay? Jesus is talking right up his eyes upon his face. I'm assuming these guys are listening. And maybe they're listening better than they normally listen, and maybe they're going to listen that way going forward. But Jesus offers here a direction with a time frame. Don't tell anyone and care. And the mantra was something they still haven't wrapped their heads around. this idea of resurrection, because they still had their own crucifixion. But when they got to that point, they knew they told everybody. They made a difference. Because what they were able to tell him is, remember when he said he was the one? He was the one! Times have you been given information to hold until the time stamp expires? Well, this is something, there is no time stamp for you and me. This is what it is to be church. It's to be the voice that announces that he is risen. But it'd be later for these guys before they would grasp the significance of resurrection. And they numbered this scene, this profound scene on the mountain, and they would tell the 12, and the 120, and as they spread across the countryside, they would want everybody to know. The disciples asked them, why then did the teachers and the law say that Elijah must come first? I love when the disciples ask questions, because you and I are going to learn, because Jesus is going to answer. But sometimes when they ask questions like here, the immediate response is, that wasn't the one I had. The audience says, was that really Moses? I thought he was fired. I thought he was Moses. Yeah. Did we glow in heaven? Did God have this glow about me? And Elijah, did you always get fired? It's his head. How did he get there to do that? And what about the booth? What do you think about that, Jesus? Did I say it too much? We have all these questions moving when they wonder. I mean, there's lots of questions that they ask about Elijah. Okay? Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come? I mean, take it back to a verse in the Old Testament, especially at the very end of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 4. This is what Malachi wrote. See, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. And he will turn the fight to the parents to the children, and the fight to the children to the parents, and that by the time of Christ the Lord was fully destructive. There have been times that there have been tests in the wilderness to anticipate Elijah, who has come before the Messiah. But the world is hot. Maybe not in person, maybe in scene, maybe in idea. Just in case, Jesus can tell us more. And so Jesus does. He offers a, what I call, a loaded report. Begin with verse 11. Jesus is like, to be sure, the Lord is coming and will restore all things. He will be the precursor. He will be the start of this current movement that was going on there. And actually, we'll find out from Jesus through his words and through the activities he's pointing at. He's actually pointing to John the Baptist, but not Elijah raised from the dead. But John the Baptist in the role of Elijah, the voice of God, calling people out for fire. And how Elijah arrived at the sons of Jordan, and they did not recognize him, but had done to him everything they wished. And if you think about what they did to John, he ended up with his head on the fire. They did what they wanted. Same way that Jesus continues. The Son of Man is going to suffer a death man. Yet another prediction of his death. And you can notice how often he said this in the next day. Verse 13. Then the disciples understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist. So when he said they got it, that he was talking about John the Baptist, that's what they understood. They missed a whole bunch of the other stuff. And we'll see that when we continue to read through the gospel. But they didn't say that this was the one that came in the name of Elijah in the prophecy and the promise. But going forward with Jesus, they were still coming. So the disciples gave Christ, they got to Elijah, and say, he would come before the Messiah. But they were trusting. At one point, it's going to be like this. This further supports Jesus' words to disciples that suffering is necessary as a preclude to glory. There is no easy road to true followers of Jesus. I'm not excited about that. I don't know about you. But he's not actually saying that every one of us is going to suffer. But what he's saying here is saying we should not expect that being saved means wrong. So it's easy. This is woven into the fabric of the if you don't believe me, you can pick up a copy of the Book of Mormon and just randomly open up and read a few of the stories of people like me and me who found that being a profoundly noisy Christian. But just watch the news. Just find it, whatever you watch the news. You won't be there long looking before you find lots of Christians around the world suffering horribly simply because they follow Jesus. And Luke ends with this out of verse 36. When the voice had spoken, it found that Jesus was alone. The disciples trusted to themselves and did not tell anyone at that time what they had seen. They listened and they obeyed. Until the resurrection. And then all heaven broke loose. If they were able to tell the others. What's in here for you today? A couple things. First, the gospelers are helping us more clearly see Jesus in this world. They want us to know that we know that we know. This is what Jesus is like in his kingdom, and yet the kingdom is here already. He wasn't just an itinerant preacher, though he did that. He wasn't just a gifted healer, though he did that well. Jesus is the eternal Son of God. Come to earth as one of us left sin on a mission, and that mission was to die on this cross and rise. That you and I might have his life thrive. He has come to die in our place for our sin, to set us free from the bondage that we could not and cannot break on our own. And he came as one of us because he needed to stand in our place. A model of living for us, but also the one who carried our sins in his person. Not just a special moment to his pandemic, but a window to better see who he is. And we hear the Father again instructing us each time we read this passage to listen to. And I'm pretty sure listening to Jesus through the Scriptures, I'm pretty sure that listening to Jesus through the Scriptures is something of a priority for you and me, but we don't always take it as a priority. And we are reminded that Jesus' mission is other than building buildings. He's building a kingdom of people. We are the church. I am the church. You are the church. We hang out in the building we call a church. And what we do in here is a pep talk. It's pep time in a football game. We've prayed all week. We've fed. We've struggled. We come together. We encourage. We learn. And we go back out and we pray it better. But this isn't what it's about. Jesus didn't have to die on the cross to launch a movement of buildings that have crosses on them. He had to die and rise to launch a people who are